Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at GayMormonStories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Danny Parkinson with another installation of Gay Mormon Stories. Today we're taking a different route in that we're going to interview a person who is indeed gay, but he's not a Mormon. In fact, he was raised an Orthodox Jew. This is part of a series that I'm doing to introduce people from other religions that have a really intense social structure that in some ways resembles the Mormon experience, certainly by the intensity and the partness of it. And they also have in common that there is not a very welcome place for gay people in those communities. And they also have in common that it's very difficult adjustment when someone separates from that religion. And so there's a lot of reasons to talk about it, and it's very interesting, the commonalities. And of course, the differences are also very interesting. As part of this, I'm going to explore with my guest just some basic information that I'm sure will be interesting about the religion that he was raised in. So my guest today is Amiad Horowitz. He is living in Israel now. He was spent most of his upbringing in Philadelphia in an Orthodox Jewish family that practices a branch of Orthodoxy called Modern Orthodoxy, and he's going to tell us more what that means, because I suspect most of you don't know the distinctions within Orthodox Judaism. But anyway, he has agreed to dedicate the time today to an interview. So, good day, Amiad.
Good day.
I think of that part. Good day, Amiad. You know, I'm going to be asking you everything. So, if I say, can you please introduce yourself and say a little bit of yourself? I don't really want you to say very much because I want to kind of get at it in order. But do you just want to say a couple of words of hello and who you are?
So, my name is Amiad Horowitz, as was mentioned. I'm 28 years old. I didn't, as was said, I grew up in the modern Orthodox community, that I guess I'll go into more detail about that later. I was raised in the U.S., moved to Israel when I was 17. I've been there ever since, and I'm actually moving away pretty soon.
Okay. So it sounds like besides having a well-rounded Orthodox experience, you're also having a well-rounded Jewish experience, having lived both in the United States and in Israel. So this is going to be very interesting to people, I think, to hear about your life. Now, our format at Mormon Stories is really to do a longer interview talking about your whole background and really taking it in order of a biography. So really the start of your story precedes you in a way, and I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about the background of your family and the tradition you came from and your ancestors and how long it seems like they've been in that tradition and what part of the world they were in before they came to Israel and America. So could you give me a starting point with the history of your heritage?
Sure. So each of my grandparents, my four grandparents, actually come from a different part of the world, but my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, is from his family's from Poland. My maternal grandmother's family was from Russia. Paternal grandfather's family was from Lithuania, and paternal grandmother's family was from what would be today in the Czech Republic, was then part of the Austrian Empire. But all those different communities would be combined to under one umbrella called Ashkenazi Judaism, or Eastern European Judaism, Jewish community, more correct. But all four of my grandparents, actually, this is pretty unique for most American Jews, were born in the U.S.
Okay.
So all four come from either the New York or Philadelphia area.
Okay. And so in your particular family, you guys missed the really difficult events of the mid-century of the World War II, and that impacted so many Jews worldwide. At least your family,
the immediate family,
family was
extended family, of course, was affected.
Yeah, so I suspect that impacted your tradition. Now, obviously, there's within the Ashkenazi Jewish community, there currently, you know, at least those that have sort of assembled in the United States, and in Israel there's a different branches of Judaism as far as the practice of religion. And do you mind just giving us a slightly brief rundown of where that falls out?
Sure. Well, when most people hear the term Orthodox Judaism, they immediately think of the guys that walk around New York dressed like they're in the middle of the 19th century. But within the Orthodox world, we would refer to them as ultra-Orthodox. They're a more stringent version of Orthodox Judaism, where they basically, it was decided by one of their big rabbis in the middle of the 19th century that in order to avoid leaving the religion and being tempted to leave the religion, nothing can change from here on out. They dress the same, they talk the same. You'll meet people in New York that were born and raised third generation in New York, and they speak Yiddish as their first language. They barely can complete a sentence in English, and when they do, they have a heavy European accent.
So this is not... So this was a phenomenon that emerged 150 years ago that somehow they decided they needed to freeze in time right there.
Well, part of there was a movement within the Jewish community to get more involved in the real world and go to university. And when people started to go to university, this is called the Haskalah in Hebrew, which means the education, they were the Enlightenment almost, and people started to leave the religion. So as a very reactionary, harsh reactionary response, this group of Jews, which started in Hungary and spread throughout Eastern Europe, said, no more, we don't change anything from here on out. You don't go to university, you don't work in the outside community, and you don't change your dress even.
Okay. And is that, at the same time, was there already a split between the conservative and reform Jewish movements, or those newer phenomena?
So at the same time, you had the reform movement started first. Also, I don't remember the exact dates, but sometime the beginning of the 19th century, if I'm not mistaken. They were huge pushers of the Haskalah, the Enlightenment movement. The conservative movement is actually a breakaway from the reform movement that said these people are changing too much, hence the name conservative. And they said, okay, there's a certain level of tradition we're keeping. You know, they traditionally continue to keep the kosher dietary laws. Their biggest issue, the conservative movement, traditionally, this has changed over the last 50 years more or less, was egalitarianism. They wanted men and women sitting together during prayers. Women could participate in the prayer services more, but they kept the Sabbath more traditionally, the kosher dietary laws. The big things didn't change, whereas the reform movement was a lot more flexible. It basically redefined a lot of the main tenets of Judaism. The destruction of the temple, the second temple in their eyes, was somewhat a good thing. It brought the Jews out to the world to be a light onto the nation. The reform movement doesn't necessarily believe that there will be a Messiah. They don't believe that the Torah was written by the hand of God. They think it was godly inspired. So the Reform movement had major, major changes. And by most Orthodox Jews, would not consider the Reform Judaism a legitimate form of Judaism at all. I was brought up in a synagogue where the rabbi came down with a ruling that was forbidden to even go into a Reform temple.
Okay. Now, within the Orthodox, I get the impression then that the modern Orthodox, the one that you came from, is, even though it's very conservative, more conservative than the other Jewish movements, conservative and reform, it is the most liberal within the Orthodox umbrella. And what really distinguishes the modern Orthodox from the conservative Jewish movement then is the women and men still don't sit together?
Men and women, there's very strict roles for men and women. Men and women do not sit together during prayers. Women do not do they wouldn't lead the prayer services. They can't be rabbis. They don't sing in public. Stricter rules of modesty on women. The main difference, though, between the ultra-Orthodox and the modern Orthodox would be the modern Orthodox is more willing to interact with the outside world, go to university, work in regular jobs, lawyers, doctors, whatever. That would be the main differences.
So even women from the modern Orthodox would attend universities and
correct,
possibly pursue careers.
Correct.
And they might, including secular universities.
True. Very much.
And just in sheer numbers, is this a small portion of the overall Orthodox community, or is there a lot of Orthodox who really fit in this category? Because I guess I wasn't even aware it existed. I thought you were either Orthodox or Reform or Conservative, so I didn't realize there was a part of Orthodox that is Orthodox, but yet you can't identify them by how they dress.
Well, in America, modern Orthodoxy was the largest branch of Orthodoxy for a very long time. Over the last 20, 30 years, it has begun to shrunk. I often hear people say that it's dying, it's disappearing. I know that a lot of people in my parents' community in New Jersey say that they're one of the last bastions of modern Orthodoxy. But at the same time, I find that a lot of people my generation, maybe as a reaction to the disappearance of the way we grew up, are trying to bring it back.
And if it's disappearing, where is it disappearing to? The other Jewish sects, or to atheism, or to the more strict Jewish sects?
Some to the more strict Jewish sects, people I grew up with. It's very common in the modern Orthodox world, after you finish high school, to go to Israel to study in what's called a yeshiva, a Jewish male seminary, or they have seminaries for females. And those schools are generally run by much harsher Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox rabbis and teachers. And when they come back to America afterwards, they've really left the modern Orthodox world for the ultra-Orthodox world. And the other main phenomenon is that people go off to university and either become more egalitarian and join the conservative reform movement or leave the religion altogether.
Interesting. So tell me then, let's go to your experience then. Your family, all four of your grandparents were already then in that subcategory of Judaism, and so it was modern Orthodoxy that sort of brought them all together in the New World.
Correct.
Okay. And so tell me about your early years as a modern Orthodox Jew, your religious experience and your life experience.
Okay. So as I said, I was brought up in a modern Orthodox community. From an early age, I went to nursery school, Orthodox Jewish nursery school. You know, the education begins then. In kindergarten, you're already starting to learn how to read Hebrew. By first grade, they're teaching you the Bible in Hebrew. And so your day in school is basically divided half and half between secular studies and Judaic studies.
But so these are most modern Orthodox Jews actually go to Jewish schools then?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
So yeah, from an early age, there's an equal focus on Judaic versus secular studies. By the time I was in third grade, let me take that back a second. Up until kindergarten, I was in class with girls. Starting in first grade, they start separating the guys and the girls. They're in separate classes. Mm-hmm. And then when I finished third grade, the following year was supposed to start. In fourth grade, they started teaching boys on Sunday. Right? Normally, everyone has off for school on Sunday. In this school, boys had to come to school on Sunday, and there they would study a full day of just Judaic religious studies. So I very much didn't want to... Judaic studies, as far as the intensity that the rabbis would put into it, was always a bit of a turnoff for me, even though at the time I very much believed and didn't think there was anything else really out there. I didn't want to take part in that harsh educational environment. So my parents switched at my request. They moved me to a different school where it's an interesting environment. The majority of the student body was conservative or reform Jews, but the teachers and the institution itself was Orthodox. Uh-huh. So there were a small number of modern Orthodox like myself, but the majority of students weren't. And I remember as a young kid, people used to tell my parents, oh, be careful, they're going to lead him astray. He's going to want to become conservative, he's going to want to become reform. And I always kind of saw that as a challenge, like, oh, I'll prove it to them, I'm going to stay religious. So it was never really an option. I was never distracted by that. And that's the sort of school I went to through eighth grade and through high school. In high school, there was you had a choice of a little bit more focus in Judaic studies versus a little bit less focus, as far as the level of intensity, I guess they would call it. And I did the more intense version, being a more religious person. I felt like it was something that was expected of me. So I did that. The other thing I... should have mentioned, within the modern Orthodox world, there's other, I wouldn't call them subdivisions, but different focuses. I grew up in a family that was very religiously Zionist. Zionism, as I believe many people know, is Jewish nationalism. The religious Zionist community believes that the modern state of Israel is the beginning of the fulfillment of prophecies from the Bible about the final coming of the Messiah, that it's a religious duty to live in Israel if possible and serve in the army if possible. And this was easily the most important lesson to my father as far as religion went. For me, it was the part of the religion I was most connected to. It most spoke to me. It was real. It was something I could do. So going through high school, that was also, I was really the only person in the high school that felt that way, that was brought up that way. Uh-huh. And I became known amongst everyone as the Israel advocate, you know, the defender of Israel. If there was ever a guest speaker that said something not kind about Israel, everyone's like, oh, you know, Amiad's going to go argue with him and he can debate anyone. And so, yeah, my nationalistic feelings and my religious feelings were very much intertwined. Uh-huh. And that's why after high school, I was still 17 when I finished high school, I picked up and I moved to Israel.
But before, I do want to talk a lot about that, but I want to go back a little bit and learn a little bit more about what it's like to be a young man with in your society and how normal young men and also gay young men deal with emerging sexuality. Mm-hmm. It sounds like was the school you went to was still segregated by gender, or were there girls
it was
in
not.
Your school?
It was
so
mixed.
You had a okay. So you were able to interact in sort of a normal American way anyway with
yes.
girls and boys. Okay. Were you allowed to date? Were boys and girls in your branch
yes.
of Judaism allowed to date each other as teenagers?
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
Something I think my parents encouraged, actually.
Okay, and so for you personally, was there, well, one other question, I mean, is in Mormonism we have this big, or at least did have this big emphasis on masturbation and pornography that's really, you know, used to be really talked about so much, you know, that it caused
yeah.
a lot of complexes, right? So I'm just curious if there's a parallel phenomena in there that you guys have this huge baseline guilt about masturbation that is sort of a ubiquitous phenomenon among young men.
Yes, very much so. I remember when I first started masturbating, I didn't know there was anything wrong with it, according to Judaism. And I remember the day that the rabbi mentioned in class that it was wrong and that the punishment for it was losing your share in heaven, that you can never get to heaven if you do it. And I remember being horrified. And I used to try and make these deals with God where I would say I wouldn't masturbate for a week or wouldn't watch pornography for a week or a month or whatever. And I very often did not live up to these promises, although I tried. But every single time I did masturbate or look at porn, I did feel horribly guilty. And I developed...
You're talking online porn.
Yes.
Okay.
I developed this fear that expecting to immediately, I don't know, something bad to happen every single time. I thought God was out to get me, and I really did try to stop, but I couldn't, and even more so when I started looking at gay porn, I thought, you know, God was going to kill me. And there's a Jewish Day of Atonement called Yom Kippur, where basically it's the day that you're supposed to ask God for forgiveness, and your fate is supposedly sealed for the next year. Yeah, so every year on Yom Kippur, I basically was convinced that God was going to seal my fate to die that following year, and I would beg God to give me another chance every year. And it was all because of guilt I felt for, A, looking at gay porn, and B, masturbating.
Okay, did you perceive that it was worse to look at gay porn than to look at other porn? Did you have any
yes.
idea that masturbation might make you gay, or was that the sort of narrative that you were told
no.
at any time? Was there ever any mention of homosexuality, or was it not even considered
just
worth talking about from your religious leaders?
As I got older, it became more of a topic just because it became more of a topic in the outside world. In class, I remember being taught that it was a sin. I remember it was a sin that one was supposed to be put to death over, according to the Bible, but I don't remember any particular in-depth conversation, about homosexuality other than the fact that it's a sin.
Okay, so say that again. You had heard it was a sin, you even saw that homosexuals were to be put to death in the ancient tradition.
Right.
But
that
it wasn't
no one spoke about it. The idea of gay marriage was beyond comprehension. It wasn't something spoken about.
So were you feeling especially sinful for being gay, or do you think you just had the same shame everybody else had who was masturbating?
So at the time, whether this will make no sense to anyone that hears this, but I had myself convinced that I am not gay. I just enjoyed looking at gay porn. I had all sorts of justifications in my head that made that work.
No, I'm not surprised, but...
So I do believe I felt guiltier because of that, yeah.
And did you ever talk to the other boys? Did it ever occur to you that maybe most of the boys are masturbating?
Oh, masturbating? Yeah, we used to joke around about it. And if you remember, I said that I was amongst the few modern Orthodox kids in the school. So the conservative and reform kids thought the whole thing was a joke and would talk about it all the time.
But the other modern Orthodox kids, I assume you were encountering them on a regular basis too at your religious community. But would they avoid the issue, or were they also commenting on it?
We would talk about it. Basically, we found ways to justify it to each other. We would say, oh, yeah, well, everyone does it. There's no way they don't do it. We're sure the rabbi also does it, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, we were just trying to probably make ourselves feel less guilty about it.
But in your case, it wasn't working terribly. You were still feeling plenty guilty.
Very much so.
Okay.
I can't speak for anyone else, but I was very much so, yeah.
Was it impacting your... Did that have any impact on your zealousness or your desire to prove yourself religiously?
I just thought it was God testing me. Probably affected my self-esteem more than my religiosity.
So during your whole entire adolescence, it never really occurred to you that you might be gay. But did you know that it existed, this thing called gay people, or this community called the gay community, or sort of an identity? Did that even enter your head? Growing up in Philadelphia, when in the 90s, was this in the 90s?
Yeah. So I knew that it existed, but I was always told it was a choice, so I kept saying I hadn't chosen it, so I can't be gay.
Okay, so this was sort of your starting point for going to Israel then and really breaking off out of your family and being on your own at age 17.
Well, yes, it was being on my own at 17. At the same time, it was doing exactly what's expected of me by my family and following in my father's footsteps. You know, he had moved to Israel after high school. For family reasons, he moved back a little bit after I was born. But it was always his dream to live there. You know, he always felt it was the right thing to do. So I was doing what was expected of me.
Okay. But also what you wanted to do. I mean, it sounds like you were kind
of... At the time, I was very extreme about it. It was very much what I wanted to do.
And so did you enter one of these highly religious universities there?
No. Again, as I mentioned, a lot of religious life in Judaism is focused on rabbinic studies, and that was just never something that appealed to me. So I joined a program that split the time between some of those studies and volunteer. Volunteerism. And I spent 2 years studying and volunteering. I volunteered as an EMT, volunteered in the Ministry of Education, and then I joined the Army, the Israeli Army, for 3 years.
Okay. And I assume you have citizenship then with both Israel and the United States?
Correct.
And by that virtue of that, you also would have a legal requirement to be in the military if you're going to live there, right?
Correct.
So you joined the Army, but this was something you were eventually going to have to do regardless if you were going to stay in Israel.
If I was going to stay in Israel. I could have done less time as an immigrant. There was ways, but I wanted to do the full 3 years.
Okay. And while you were... How many years before you entered the Army?
I was 19.
So you entered the Army, and did that cause any changes in your perceptions about gay, or did you have a... more gay feelings by having all that camaraderie with the other guys?
It definitely I had to face the feelings more, but as before, I just explained them and justified them and had myself convinced that I wasn't gay.
Uh-huh. Then you mentioned that you were being set up on a lot of dates. Could you explain that again? Because it did
drop
out.
Yes. In the modern Orthodox community, generally the way guys and girls meet, again, generally, is through setups by friends or parents or friends of parents. A very common sentence you'll hear is, "Oh, I know a girl for you. Here's her phone number. Would you like to talk to her?" Whatever. So on my weekends off in the army, I spent off a lot of them meeting girls, hoping to find someone that I would hit it off with.
And what kind of dates would you go on when you would go on these kind of dates?
I'd meet them in the city. I lived in Jerusalem, in the center of Jerusalem, and we'd go to a restaurant. And the nature of the date always felt very much like an interview. You know, there's no touching. Guys and girls don't. Orthodox guys and girls don't touch each other before they're married. So it was just a lot of questions trying to figure out, hey, is this someone that I could stand being with and see myself getting along with? And then deciding if there's going to be a second date. It felt very much like an interview. Never a very comfortable situation.
Was it in your hands if it was a second date, or basically it did have to sort of be mutually agreed on by a third party? Or
yeah, it was in our hands. I would call the girl and ask her, or I would tell her what I think or ask her what she thinks. The few times I did find myself getting along with a girl, seeing that there could be second, third, fourth dates, I would panic, and I would think in the back of my head, if I end up marrying this girl, I'll never get a chance to experiment with a guy, and if that's something I'm willing to give up on. And it's when I start to get a little bit more confused.
Okay, so this idea was entering your head that you wanted to experiment with a guy.
Yes.
Now, was this sort of rigid format, which seems like didn't sound terribly flirtatious. I expect if you had been a little more into the idea, maybe it wouldn't have felt so much like a job interview, and you would have been more inclined to be flirtatious or something, or at least
I would imagine
yourself
so.
With looks and glances and whatever. But to you, you didn't feel that. But were your peers talking about their experiences that way, or raving
some
about this girl they met, or
some didn't like the formality of it, the structure of it, and they would complain. But others, you know, they enjoyed it more. And I think it's a combination of a few things. One, I wasn't all that into the whole system and into dating girls. And two, just always had low self-confidence, and just putting myself out there like that was not easy.
Okay, so you never managed to get into anything beyond a third or fourth date then?
While I was religious, no.
Did you finish out your military service then?
I finished out my military service, and I signed up for university.
While you were in the military, was there active things going on? Did you see active combat, or was it a relatively peaceful time during those years?
No, my unit was one of the first units in the Second Lebanon War in 2006.
Okay, so you were in southern Lebanon during that time?
Correct. I was not a forward combat soldier at that time. I was a support soldier. I fixed antennas on tanks that were and radios on tanks.
Okay.
I never fired my gun.
Okay, but did you have friends who lost their life in that time? Okay,
yes.
So you actually had peers within your military, that people were friends in the military that you lost the lives of lives, and I expect that would have an impact on your nationalism just going through that.
I don't think I realized the impact until much later on, but yes. The immediate impact, I began to understand the enormity and how incomprehensible it is, the value of one person's life. I remember I got to go to one of my friend's funerals, and just seeing all these people that knew him that were grieving and distraught. And I was thinking, you know, sometimes these wars, you're hundreds of thousands, millions of casualties. And I couldn't imagine, after seeing this much pain and suffering with just one person, how that could possibly be on greater scales.
Right.
We realized it's two of my friends that were killed. One was a right-wing nationalist religious guy who, you know, did everything the way I was always brought up to do and was told was right. And the other friend of mine that was killed from my basic training unit was left-wing, secular, more liberal guy who did everything wrong from the way I was brought up, and they were both killed. And
yeah,
while I always knew that that sort of stuff happened, you know, it just seeing something like that, experiencing losing those two people, made me started to put the cracks in my religious belief, I think.
And it put the cracks there because you...
Because to me, a big part of my religion was, you know, God's judgment. And if this person did everything right and then God still, in my head, had him killed, what's worth... Why is it worth doing those things?
I see. Because it didn't seem like God had distinguished between the...
Between the person, right, exactly.
Pious one and the non-pious one. Interesting. And so, okay, so then keep going. What, where did your life go from there after you left the military?
So after I left the military, I joined university right away. I signed up to for a BA in history. And it was during that first year at school that I really, religious beliefs started to fall apart for me. Part of history, I had to learn a lot of philosophy. And I started to ask questions that I never thought about. I never thought that these questions could be asked. People from all sorts of backgrounds that have all different thoughts, and I started to think that everything just started to fall apart. It just stopped making sense as far as the religion. The biblical story stopped making sense. The more history I learned about it, I took a class, Intro to Biblical History, and it was taught by a religious professor, an archaeologist. He said the facts on the ground do not support the biblical story. And this professor, even though he said the facts on the ground don't support the biblical story, he said the Bible is not a history book. It's a moral book. But once the history started to fall apart for me and I looked at the Bible wasn't a moral book. So I kind of had a Descartes moment where I realized I didn't know anything. And I had to start from scratch, which was a very scary realization that my initial thought was to fake it, you know? How could I disappoint my family? Though I was worried how they would react, if they would still want me in the family, which I realize now is an absurd thought. My family loved me and would never have disowned me, but I do know of other families where such things happened, and I was terrified at the idea that I didn't really believe anymore.
Yeah.
But, and I told my parents right away, actually, and they reacted pretty badly, but obviously they didn't cut me off, but they were very much hurt. They were very angry. It was the beginning of a pretty difficult period in our relationship.
Yeah. And so prior to this, it sounds like your sexuality really didn't play very much role in your faith crisis.
Did not.
That happens to be parallel to my story, that my religion, my religious beliefs, I really confronted them before I ever confronted my sexuality. But just so you're aware, we have that commonality. But, you know, keep going.
Yes.
And
so, yes, I started to explore the non-religious world. And part of that was trying to continue to date girls in the non-religious fashion.
Yeah.
And I started to date this girl, and she seemed to really like me, and so I continued. I figured, you know, I didn't know what I was really looking for, and she liked me, so I continued to date her. And I really realized that as it was a few months in, I didn't want to be with her, and I was interested in guys. It was really the first time I admitted to myself that I wanted to be with a guy. And at first I said I must be bisexual because I thought women were attractive. I didn't understand yet the difference between finding someone attractive and being attracted to them.
Right.
You know? So I broke up with her, and I started to slowly tell a small group of close friends, told them that I was interested in guys, and non-religious friends, and, you know, if they knew anyone, I had no idea how you go about meeting a guy.
But somehow you knew there were gay guys out there.
I knew there were gay guys out there.
And you kind of hoped maybe one of your friends knew one of these guys and could introduce you or something?
Yes. I knew that some of them had gay friends, and maybe they could advise me. And they advised me there is a website in Israel that's the website for meeting people for gay hookups and dates and whatnot here. And I signed up for that.
Okay.
And once I was with a guy versus when I had been with a girl, I realized the difference. I realized just because I think a girl's pretty, well, it did not mean I was attracted to her. And, you know, I started to slowly realize, accept the fact that I was gay.
Okay. And so you started dating guys then?
I wouldn't call it dating as much as meeting and hookups. The dating scene in Jerusalem, where I was living, it's a pretty conservative city. The gay scene is less so today, but back then was very much underground. There's only one gay bar in the whole city, and then it closed pretty quickly. Recently reopened, though.
And so what gay life kind of available to you there was really about hookups, because there wasn't really an opportunity for a more open type of gay lifestyle, or
exactly.
Or there really weren't people who were interested in more serious dating and relationships.
Especially in Jerusalem. I mean, had I gone out of Jerusalem, you'll find more of that, but it might just be a cultural thing. In Israel, I find that people in my age range in Israel are generally more into hookups, and they don't date so seriously until later.
Okay.
Which is something always disappointed me personally, because I've always been more of a dating sort of person.
Uh-huh. Okay, so was there a point where you really had crossed the line with your identity, with your self-identity, and just realized, this is where I'm going, and I'm not ever going to get married, and that's my future?
Huh. Good question. I can't picture the moment where I would have thought that. There was a point where it became less scary when I told people I was gay. I didn't feel as awkward saying it. And I realized it about myself. But did I think I'll never get married? No, because I still very much want to get married. Whether I'll live in a place that will allow that or not is to be determined. But I want that lifestyle. I want to be married. I want a family.
So at this point, you're not entirely sure you won't eventually go that way.
Well, I'm saying gay marriage.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So for you,
just be coming out of the closet in 2011 or 2010, I think isn't necessarily there doesn't have to be a point where you say, oh, I'm never going to get married, because every year there's more places in the world that accept gay marriage.
So this was by the time the consciousness that you wouldn't marry a woman kind of came, already it had been replaced by, oh, there's a chance I'll marry a man, and this kind of became what seemed normal, or the what you would naturally be inclined towards.
Right.
So you basically then arrived to a point where you consider yourself a gay man, you identify that with that label, you were interested in dating, the dating scene was hard in Jerusalem. Did you stay in Jerusalem, or did you eventually...
I moved to the Tel Aviv area, where it's... a lot more secular and liberal and very gay-friendly.
Uh-huh.
I still didn't enjoy the dating scene here. Just not for me, but that's a cultural thing, I guess, as I said.
Because you find that you would prefer a more traditional style of dating men that was more
not
about...
Not as, like, traditional. Just I enjoy relationships. I enjoy romance. Or at least I, at the time, before I had ever experienced any of it, it's something that appealed to me. Yeah, I'm just a very emotional person.
Okay. But what you're saying is, when I say traditional, it's more similar to what most straight people see in romance. And
yes.
Really a lot of American gays. I mean, I would say that most American gays are a little bit more like that, but maybe not when they're in their 20s. I don't know. Maybe as you're approaching your 30s, you're going to find more people in the camp of being more serious about it and not playing the field so much, I hope, for your sake, if that's what you where you want to go.
Yes.
But you told me you plan to leave Israel.
Correct. Uh-huh. 29 days from now, I'm moving to Vietnam.
How come? What made you make that decision?
My initial interest in Vietnam was academic. It's a topic I came across through my master's studies. And then I fell in love with the culture the more I studied about it and met great people. And then I went there to study for a summer, had an amazing time, met great people. I also have an affinity for Asian guys. I'm there and everyone's beautiful and fun to look at.
Okay.
So it's just, I'm looking for a change. I don't know if you came across this in my blog at all, but I was recently in a bad accident. My parents were killed with while they were with me, and we were hit by a car. So I'm just kind of looking for to get away and a fresh start and
Yeah, I'm
new
sorry
scenery.
to hear that about your parents. What, they were visiting you not that long ago, and
I was visiting them in September,
in the
and we
United
were
States.
and a car lost control and went up on the curb and hit us and two other friends and my parents. And my parents were killed, and me and their two friends were injured badly. I actually just got back to Israel 3 weeks ago. I was in America for almost half a year, rehabilitating.
That's a lot of hard events. Sorry to hear about that, but I hope you're recovering, and physically you're recovering then.
I mean, some limitations and still some things to do, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I hate to dwell too much on the painful part, but I did want to kind of ask you, in those years then where you were out as a gay man and you were also out as a non-Orthodox Jew, you had left your religion. Did you open up with your parents also about your sexual orientation?
I didn't tell my parents until a little bit later. The first guy I was ever with was he was older than me. He was in his low 40s. And he told me the story about how he still lived a double life. He was married with kids. His wife knew he was gay, but they wanted to keep up appearances. He was afraid of telling his parents, and it was just I felt very sad for him, and I looked at his life. I knew it was something I never wanted. I wouldn't want to live in fear of being honest with my family. I wouldn't want to hide who I am. So I knew I would tell my parents. I just didn't know when. And what I did actually was I just kind of laid down hints until they asked, because I didn't want to make some big dramatic announcement. And I knew that they would eventually ask, and my dad did ask me, and I told them. And on the one hand, it was very, very rough. There was a lot of crying. On the other hand, it kind of gave my parents some justification and explanation to my not being religious, where they had always hoped that I would somehow find my way back to the religion. This kind of made it understandable that I would not.
Okay.
And because I wasn't hiding anything anymore and I could be honest with them, our relationship really started to improve.
Okay, so that's sort of softened the blow. I mean, I sorry, the blow had been softened by your coming out of the not being religious sometime before that. So in a way, maybe this was even less serious compared to the fact that you left the religion in their eyes. Is that possible?
I think the blow was softened, A, because I had hinted at it a while. They had time to think about it. And I actually was more worried to tell them because of how badly they reacted to me not being religious. I thought this would be worse to them. I couldn't imagine how they would react. And they were very loving. Again, it was very hard for them. They were crying. They were hurt. They were scared. They didn't know what this would mean for our future, for grandkids or whatever. But at the same time, they said right away, we love you no matter what, and we'll figure out how to live like this.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that, but I just want to throw in that my experience was very similar to yours in some ways, which was that I also left the religion first, and when I came out as gay, it was actually less of a problem also than the fact that I left the religion. But it also helped me with my relationship with them in a similar way because I was so far outside of what they hoped for me, I guess, that it sort of helped them let go, and we could just talk about other stuff and relate around other stuff, and they could just appreciate me for what I was, and they weren't sitting there hoping I'd come back, and it really improved the dialogue so much, and at least I had so much better time with them that I was coming around more, and I wasn't, before they were, when I was in the church, they were bugging me about being zealous enough, if I was obeying strict enough the commandments. And But now that when I was outside, it just there was no point asking. It was so irrelevant that I could have a comfortable, enjoyable adult relationship with them. So I sort of relate to that. But I do have one more question then about how they might have dealt with it. Do you think that they had to go through a struggle as far as their relationship with their religion? Do you think that for them they had to say, okay, we're accepting our son, but this is causing us a crisis in how we view our religion? Do you think they went through something like that?
They didn't. I know that they had religious questions. They wanted to know why God had done this. They realized it wasn't a choice on my part, which was a big step, I think. My father actually thanked me at one point for trying so hard to be straight for all those years, okay. Which was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty empathetic.
Yeah, but they did. They definitely wanted to know. They had a lot of questions that basically boiled down to why and what they should do. But they never questioned the religion. I know my mom was angry for a while, but she never questioned the validity of Judaism. She was just angry at God. But it wasn't like she stopped praying or stopped practicing. They never questioned the religion. They never questioned the validity of the religion as a whole.
Were you able to introduce them to someone you were dating? Did you get that far with them or have that opportunity to see how that might go?
No. But while they told me they weren't ready to meet anyone when I was dating, and at the time I actually wasn't dating anyone, but my mom, I remember one day, called me to tell me she had read a review of a new gay bar and thought I might want to check it out. There was a day when two Israeli politicians came out and made some very public homophobic comments, and my mom called me to tell me how offended she was by it and how, you know, she doesn't agree with such comments. And these were big steps. These were really big steps. My mom was addressing me and talking to me about gay issues.
But also feeling empathy for you. And
it was,
being interested in the things that she knew, feeling pain for something that she knew would cause you pain.
Exactly. I mean,
that's beautiful.
It was a very, very touching moment, I remember.
Well, I'm really sad that you didn't get to take the full journey with them and share with them the rest of your journey, because you've got a lot of ahead of you, and that was way too young for that to be interrupted. So,
yeah.
But I am really happy that you get to share that they really reached out to you in a loving way that really exceeds what a lot of people from these kind of traditions are able to do in such a way so quickly. So I'm happy for you that you get to have nice memories in this, you know, hard time.
Before the car hit us, I was walking next to my mom, and there was a lull in the conversation, and I was thinking during that lull how lucky I am and how impressed I was with my parents about how much progress we made and how what a good time we were having together. And
So one of your last moments was appreciative.
Very much so. Something that's interesting on a similar note, after the accident happened on the Sabbath while I was visiting my parents, and their whole community rallied around me and my sister and helped me in New Jersey again in the hospital and rehab centers and surgeries, and people came to visit me all the time in the hospital, and I was 3 months in a rehabilitation center, and I was constantly being visited and brought food, and everyone had learned everything about my life because everyone found my Facebook and my my blog after the accident, and no one seemed to really have an issue with it. You know, they look past it. No one rejected me because of my homosexuality or atheism. Everyone helped me.
And you were surprised by that?
I was very much surprised by that. I know my parents had been worried about how their friends would react. And one of their friends told me before I left America just now that he wished my parents had been able to see how no one cared and everyone accepted me. And it really was surprising and heartwarming.
Yeah. Do you think that I want to give them all the kudos I can for that, but do you think the seeing your tragedy helped open up their hearts to having empathy? Do you think it would have been a little harder for them to do it in a different context?
Maybe, but that would just be speculation, so I can't know for sure.
Yeah.
I would like to think that.
Yeah.
I mean,
but regardless, if their hearts were open, they had to be available to have their hearts be open. So it does speak well for them, and it's a nice story. And your sister, is she still there? Is she still part of that community?
No, my sister actually lives in Israel. My sister is more religious, more strictly religious and conservative than my parents were. Me and her had some issues for a while, but now we're doing okay. But it was hard for her to meet up not being religious, and especially being gay. It was all very, very difficult on her.
So your religious community, though, in the end, they were aware of you because of your blog. It was basically, you know, open information. Did people talk to you about the issue, or was it more just showing that they love the son of their friend and the person who came up in their community?
No, people definitely spoke to me about it. The women were more comfortable talking to me about me being gay than the men were, but the men definitely discussed my atheism with me. I remember one time a friend of my parents who was a fairly religious man, fairly strict, but he said to me, "Thank God you're an atheist," because he had read my blog, and I'd wrote about how my atheism actually helped me get through the tragedy, because whereas I know other people were looking for explanations of why and how this could happen to such wonderful people, I accepted it as a freak occurrence without any reason and didn't have to have those struggles.
Well, you know, that softened the tragedy. I'm glad that it wasn't something worse than that, you know, at such a hard time in your life. I'm glad your community came through for you. Can I ask you a little bit about something that I'm interested in about Tel Aviv in particular? Is that, and maybe you don't have that much experience with this, but I understand that as far as the Middle East goes, for better or for worse, Tel Aviv is a gay mecca, just because of it's the only place where there is any gay life whatsoever, except maybe there's a little underground scene in Beirut. So that makes me interested in how the traditional enemies, you know, the Palestinians and Israelis, are managing in the gay community. And there's been some talk about it, but I just want to know if you have any experience with interacting with Palestinians, for example, and other Jews, or if you have a sense of how that goes in the community in general, in the gay community.
The gay community is generally a lot more liberal, less radically nationalistic, less racist, less religious. It's not so much of an issue within the gay community. I know in the Tel Aviv Pride Parade, there were Jews, there were Arabs, there was every type of person you can think of, because, you know, people come from all over the world for the Tel Aviv Pride Parade. But I can tell you, actually, one of my favorite things in Israel in the gay community is, actually, it's in Jerusalem. There's a Monday night drag show where you will have everyone from every background. You'll have religious gays, non-religious, Jews, non-Jews, Arabs in this one place, and everyone just gets along. It's really one of the only places in Israel where I've seen such a thing, especially in Jerusalem, which is such a conservative city. But because it has a high Palestinian or Arab population here in Jerusalem, do get that mix, and it's really quite impressive.
Yeah. Do you personally have very many friends who are actually Palestinian then?
Personally, I do not have any Palestinian friends, no. I've met a few guys, but they were all younger than I was, you know, just not the same crowd.
Because I know that that's a notoriously homophobic society, and that by doing anything gay, you actually risk your life because of the sort of familial obligation to do sort of a blood, what's that called?
Yes.
Do you know what that's called?
I don't know what it's called, but I know that in the more, not necessarily the Israeli proper Arab communities, but the more Palestinian communities and the occupied territories, it's a much bigger issue. I know that gay Palestinians ask for refuge in Israel to hide from their families that are trying to hurt them for being gay. there was one story that's well known in Jerusalem, a Palestinian guy from Ramallah. I think this was in 2006. He would come. He was actually a drag queen. And one day, the local Hamas group, which is a radical Islamic group, found out that he was gay. And from the drag show in Jerusalem, some people snuck him to the airport and snuck him out of the country.
What? Some of his friends?
Because if he went back home, that they were going to hurt him.
Okay, so some of his friends saved his life.
Some of his Jewish friends
snuck him to the airport and snuck him out of the country.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I guess you're leaving Israel now, and is it because you're moving on that this phase of Israel is, you know, you're putting it in the past, and you just want to see what the world is like, or do you see yourself going back there, or do you see yourself going back to the United States, or do you just not have an agenda at all?
I do not see myself going back to Israel. I just, certain things just never worked out for me here the way I thought they would. I never got used to life here or the culture here. Probably long term back to the States, but I do want to see the world a bit, experience living in different places. I have this interest in East Asian cultures, so I want to go around there a bit. I don't know how long I'll spend in Vietnam. Depends on how things go there, but I'm open to anything right now.
Well, if you meet someone and get married, then maybe you'll be able to bring him home to the United States if we get marriage equality, but we don't know yet about that. Because I'm in a relationship, I've been in a 12-year relationship with someone that is Costa Rican, so I have that particular problem. I can't have him live with me in the United States till we get legal marriage there. But I'm hoping that if this situation confronts you, you also have that one already, that ability already in place.
I hope so too. That's the dream.
Okay, and are you just going to Vietnam with a job in mind, or you're just going there to see what you can find?
No, I'm going to be tutoring in English. People are English tutors, American English tutors in Vietnam could make a good living.
Well, it's a new chapter for you.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, tell me, what do you hang on to though from the religion of your upbringing? Because the reason I'm acquainted with you is because you're participating on an online forum where a lot of Orthodox Jews are. I think that there's obviously a piece of the Orthodox Jew still in you, even if you don't have the religious belief. Can you tell me a little bit about what you appreciate about your heritage, about your upbringing, about your even your religion, and if there's some values that you really still hold to?
My connection would be I have a lot of friends that are religious or formerly religious, and I have my family that's still religious, my sister, my grandparents, my aunts, uncles, cousins. So that's my connection. What do I hold on to? Honestly, I don't know. But I can't think of anything. I don't live the Jewish lifestyle at all. I only do the holidays when I happen to be with someone that does them. I like traditional food.
But in terms, say, of values?
I would have trouble saying my values are Jewish values.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering if there's somewhere along the way you developed a moral, some moral values that I assume you're carrying now, and maybe they weren't specific to your religion, but I'm wondering if there's something you can identify that was part of your religious experience that are some values you would still say you haven't given up as part of giving up your religion.
Family, charity. Family and charity are two big things. Those are values that exist in Judaism. I don't know if I have those values because it's a Judaism. Respect, respecting elders. So much of my Judaism was based around this intense nationalism, which is gone. Strict belief in the biblical story and the prophecies and all that's gone. So yeah. I feel very disconnected, not in a necessarily bad way. I mean, I just don't feel any connection to that lifestyle anymore.
Yeah.
Sometimes I joke around with friends. You can make, you know, jokes that only some religious person would know, you know, cultural jokes or biblical jokes. But
yeah. Do you sometimes miss the community you had, though, the sense of belonging that came with growing up in a community like that?
I used to discuss this with my father a lot. My father loved the fact that he was part of this community. I'm very much an individualist. I love the idea of the individuals. I love the idea of everyone being unique and different. And I pride myself in having a very mixed group of friends. Again, I have religious friends and non-religious friends and gay friends and straight friends and Israelis, Americans, Asians. Like, it just, I like that. I like diversity. So I used to debate with my father what the value of such a community of similar people is. And after the accident, I definitely saw the value of being in such a community. You know, everyone coming through to help you and no questions asked. I'm still not sure it's something that appeals to me or that I miss. It's nice. It's nice to visit. It's nice to see.
Maybe even nice to come from.
It's nice to come from. Very true. And it's nice to have that to go back and visit. But it's not necessarily something I'm looking for in my future.
Yeah.
I like to say I see myself as citizen of the world.
Yeah. Well, you and I have an incredibly huge amount of commonality in how both our journeys and our how we evolved. We didn't talk about mine as much, but a lot of things you went through, I could just say ditto to.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But I'd like to, you know, I think we've managed to get through your lifeline. And now I'd like to just see if there's anything you'd like to add. Is there, you know, a message you'd like to send out to, say, a young person who might be coming out of a religious tradition and they're having to confront a minority sexual orientation, being gay? Do you have anything to say to them, or even to a young Jew or a young Mormon?
I would like to say that while it might be scary, and it's definitely going to be scary to leave what you know and to accept change, and the potential reward greatly outweighs the risk, in my opinion, in my experience. I've met the most amazing people. I've had amazing experiences that I would never have had had I stayed religious or had I stayed in the closet. Life is so much richer when you're living it for yourself and searching for your own happiness. And I think that if someone embraces that, It's definitely worth it. It's scary and as hard as it might be, it's definitely worth it.
So what you're saying is you feel like, though, that these things that were keeping your vision facing only in one direction opened up to 360 degrees. Is that a worthwhile?
That's fair.
And I do have another question that I want to put in. Have you come across some in the Jewish community, have you come across some guys or some women who have manage to maintain their religion or find a way of reinterpreting the religion that allowed them to also affirm being gay?
Yes.
Do you think have you seen some good examples of people who seem to be doing that in a positive way?
It's a growing phenomenon. I was recently at a protest about gay rights here, and there was a huge group of religious, openly gay people. I mean, women, men. Personally, don't understand it. To each their own. They're not hurting anyone. Everyone can do what they want. I personally do not understand how someone could say the Bible is the direct word of God and then still embrace their homosexuality. But if it works for them, there's synagogues of such community in the LGBT community now in Israel. They're not big, but they exist. I know in America that at the Yeshiva University, which is the biggest modern Orthodox university in America. They recently had a debate with the rabbis about how to see the gay community. And basically they said it's, you know, still a sin, but they shouldn't be shunned. And that's led to more people coming out of the closet. And a lot of people do not want to abandon their lifestyle. They like it. They enjoy the community. They do feel connection. They do believe the religion is real. I personally do not understand how they combine the two, but to each their own.
Well, you're going to find debates like this a lot in Mormon, within the gay Mormon community, about whether or not you can possibly be a Mormon and be gay, and there's certainly a lot who feel very strongly that you can, and there's others who think it's absolutely impossible. But it is also in Mormonism a similar trend that there is more and more people finding a way to be Mormon and be gay at the same time. So that's interesting that a parallel phenomenon is happening even in the level of the modern Orthodox Jew. And I suspect the Reform Jew, there's quite a bit of openness for gay people.
Reform Judaism, it's very open. There's LGBT rabbis. It's very open. It's gay marriage.
There's actually rabbis who perform gay marriages in a Jewish way.
In the Reformed community, correct. Yeah.
Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to add while we're still on the mic here?
Nothing that I can think of other than this was very interesting and definitely was a pleasure talking to you.
Well, I certainly appreciate your sharing your story, and I know my audience is going to really appreciate hearing about your experience and the parallels and the differences that we share. So with that, I wish you a lot of luck in your move to Vietnam, and I really hope that you can have a lot of healing there from your recent tragedies.
Thank you. The one other thing I would like to add, now that I think about it, maybe some of your listeners would be interested in checking out my blog.
Oh yeah, please.
It's offthepathandontotheroad.com, or offthepathandontotheroad.blogspot.com, I'm sorry. I just write about my life experiences and opinions about certain issues. Check it out.
And one little tidbit of information that I've gotten out of my dialogue with Orthodox Jews is that Off the Path is a way they talk about within Orthodox Judaism of people who are apostates. So something that sounds neutral to us, Off the Path, actually is quite a loaded way of calling your blog. And so just to throw in that nuance of information to my audience.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was graciously donated by Clayton Pixton. Check him out at claytonpixton.com. Why should this anxious load press down your weary mind? Haste to your heavenly Father's throne and sweet refreshment find. His goodness stands approved, unchanged from day to day.
I'll draw.